From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. At first glance, it looks as though early voting in New Hanover County is up slightly in the first 12 days compared to the last municipal election. As of October 29th, 18% more people have voted so far this year compared to 2017. This doesn't necessarily mean that voter turnout as a whole will be higher this year. That remains to be seen. But we can examine today which issues are driving voters to the polls, why municipal elections often turn out the fewest voters, and whether there's more mudslinging at the local level than in years past. In the Cape Fear region, municipal elections are nonpartisan races. This year, one Surf City candidate is facing six felony charges for election law violations. His opponent, the sitting mayor, watched as his adult son was accused of creating a fake campaign website to attack his father's challenger. In Oak Island, a mayoral candidate has voted not in Oak Island or anywhere in Brunswick County over the last decade. Ken Thomas has voted in Columbus County, where he also has a residence. In that same municipality, Mayor Sin Brochure is avoiding questions about her adult son's conviction on child porn charges. In Wilmington, six-term Mayor Bill Sappho faces a challenge from a political newcomer. And in Brunswick County, two municipalities are fighting over the future of H2GO, a water and sewer utility, as voters decide on the next board members of that utility. This election could change the trajectory of H2GO. Did you know this year is an election year? And did you know that early voting is almost over? In fact, Election Day is Tuesday. It's an elections roundup today where we look at the issues and the candidates. Joining me now is Nadine Gibson, an assistant professor in the Department of Public and International Affairs at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Nadine Gibson, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for having me.
And we are inviting your questions on this Wednesday. Do you plan to vote in this year's municipal election? Why or why not? What are the issues motivating you this year? You can call us today at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Professor Gibson, your specialty is election administration, the hows and wheres and whens of voting. You say North Carolina is complicated compared to other places. What do you mean by that?
It's complicated because the rules keep changing. It's hard. Every election, there seems to be a different set of rules. On top of, you know, having municipal elections on off years, you know, this, it gets complicated real fast for a voter.
It does. When you say off years, what do you mean by that?
Well, we're not voting for any other offices besides municipal elections, municipal races in this election. So we're not voting for House of Representatives, governor, senator, president. So it's the years in between the midterm and the general.
Now, as I understand North Carolina voting law or elections law here, municipalities are able to decide on their own when they want to hold, which years they want to hold municipal elections. Why would municipalities decide to hold them in what you're calling off years or odd years?
One reason would be that it actually gives voters a chance to pay attention to the municipal issues. Now that they're the only things on the ballot, you're not just trying to get people to come vote for president. In general, when there's a bigger office like president or senator, House of Representatives, those are great, but people tend to overlook the municipal elections. And, you know, they're going to do party line voting, which in a municipal election here, that's not the case.
These are nonpartisan races. Mm-hmm. Are we at the point where most people are thinking about candidates and issues, or do you think people are still trying to figure out who leans red and who leans blue?
I'm sure voters are going to be trying to figure this out because looking at partisan identification is one of the easiest cues that you can find. And if this person shares the same beliefs as me, if you look at the sample ballots, which are available online on the New Hanover County Board of Elections, you're not going to see a D or an R or an I next to any of these names. So people are going to have to do their research on their own to figure out and maybe actually look at the issues.
And that takes work, which leads me to why is turnout so low in municipal elections? We know that presidential years typically have the highest turnout. Why is it the flip side for munis?
Well, I think it's a mixture of many things. I'd say the first is it's hard to become informed as a voter, especially given the amount of elections that United States citizens have to vote in, which is great. On one hand, we have a lot of say in who runs our government. But on the other hand, we have to become educated. And especially when there's no partisan identification next to any candidate's name, we have to actually do our own research and investigate candidate by candidate. In my experience, not all candidates maintain websites or have literature that's freely available for the general public to look at. So sometimes it'll take time and energy for any one person to become educated. I'm looking at the ballot for New Hanover County and City of Wilmington, and there are quite a few candidates you would have to look up and see what's going on with each one of them. And for council member, you can vote for up to three.
So, right. Yeah, but it's only one race. I mean, you've got city council and then mayor, and that's it. That's all that's on the ballot.
Sure. It's still a lot of work. It takes time to become educated. And if you want to be a good citizen and cast your ballot with as much information as possible, this isn't just something you can sit down and do in 5 minutes.
A political scientist told me the last time around that it's this very specialized group of people that winds up electing people to local town councils and boards and into mayoral positions. Why? I mean, obviously, it's a lower turnout, so you have a smaller group of people. But who are those people who tend to turn out?
The people who tend to turn out are people, I'd say free time is a big component. Who has the time to both educate themselves as well as go to the polling place? Luckily, we have multiple days to do it, but I don't think the research shows that the people take advantage of the extra days as much as you would hope. They
don't. No. So you're saying research shows early voting isn't really optimized for the voters?
It's not.
Most people still show up on election day?
I'd say that people who are not going to turn out and vote, generally, they weren't going to go anyway. So it does make voting easier for those who are already planning on going out and voting, which is a good thing. But there hasn't been a wave of higher turnout as a result of increasing the amount of days. There is something to be said about the specialness of an election day, and that it's a civic day where us as Americans can all cast our ballots together. Also, the election, you might not know how it's going to go. Now that we know that there's higher turnout possibly for this election, we might have some hints on who's actually going to win.
What do you mean by that? What are you talking about? Who might win?
Well, higher turnout elections generally tend to benefit liberals and Democrats, whereas lower turnout elections tend to benefit Republicans.
So in this case, it's nonpartisan race, mm-hmm. but we know the voter registration mm-hmm. of the candidates. And I think there's only one registered Republican mm-hmm. who's running in the Wilmington race. So given that, what do you think about the chances? For instance, we have a mayor who's been mayor of Wilmington since 2006.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think his challenger has a shot at this point?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. Fair enough. And so that our listeners understand, you are very new to this region. You just moved here in July.
Yes, yes. But I do have to say that municipal elections, you're not talking about necessarily the same group, as you mentioned. It's not the same group of people. So the people who turn out on election day in municipal elections are usually the most informed, most politically sophisticated, most engaged types of voters. These are the people who are the really interested folks. They're taking time out of their day to vote in a municipal election. So that's not the average voter.
What is the danger of not doing research
before you go to the polls and then going to the polls and voting anyway. Because we know that there are people out there who say, I don't really have time to do the research, but it's my civic duty to vote. We know there are those people. And we've had examples of things happening in elections. How would you articulate the issue there?
Well, as someone who's looked into things like ballot order, I think the names higher alphabetized on the ballot. So we have it, according to the sample ballot, they're in alphabetical order. So who's ever listed first on the ballot might get a little bit extra for people who just want to move on with their day.
So research shows that ballot order makes a difference. And if you're closer to the top of the ballot, you have a better shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every state does it differently. But it's called a primacy effect. So same thing in surveys. But people tend to vote for the first name on the ballot more often just to get through the ballot. They don't like the idea of leaving it blank. You know, it's my civic duty to vote, so I'm just going to vote for someone. I don't know who. Sometimes people look for a female candidate. Sometimes people look for the same co-ethnicity. They're looking for some cue without any information, which, you know, more often than not, if you have a good system, you might be able to identify people who are closer to you ideologically, but, it's still a gamble.
And you're listening to Coastline. UNCW Professor Nadine Gibson, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
When we come back from this break, Port City Daily's Ben Schachtman joins us for a look at the races we're covering this year. If you'd like to ask a question about this year's municipal elections, you can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Despite most of the election coverage focusing on 2020, this year is an election year. In North Carolina, most municipalities hold elections in odd-numbered years. That's true across the Cape Fear region. And today, Ben Schachtman, managing editor of Port City Daily, joins me now for a look at what and who is on the ballot this year. Ben Schachtman, welcome to Coastline.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you back. And you can ask your own question during the live Wednesday discussion about municipal elections. Tell us why you've either already voted, you plan to vote on Election Day, or you're not going to vote this year. Call us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. So Ben Schachtman, given that early voting so far in the first 12 days. We're trying to do our best looking at apples to apples, we're not done. It looks like it's up a little bit in New Hanover County. Do you have a sense for what that's going to mean in the Wilmington mayoral election?
I do. I think that, just look at last year, right? 2 years ago, in 2017, where we had Todd Zola ran against Mayor Saffo. Todd Zola didn't, I'm not trying to be cruel, but I don't think he had any actionable campaign, plans.
I think he was actually disabled.
Yes.
I think
there were some issues there.
Yeah.
But just because there was a different name on the ballot, we did see a spike in early voting, and we saw, I believe it was 1,700 or 1,800 votes for him, which, as you've been reporting, changed the percentage. You know, Mr. Saffo has been winning by 96, 97. I think last year it was more like 86% like that?
Yeah, it was a low percentage for Mayor Saffo.
So one, we have a challenger. That's going to change things. And two, there's definitely been a lot of social media activity around Mr. Scott's campaign. And that's the kind of thing that, gets people's attention.
Yeah, and that actually didn't exist when I think the last time Mayor Saffo had a serious challenger was 2007.
I think MySpace might have been rocking at the time.
So 2 years ago, H2GO, this water and sewer utility in Leland, was a very controversial race on the ballot. And this year, it's got a lot of competition for most controversial race. We have a number that I talked about in the beginning of this discussion. But H2GO is still pretty heated. Can you tell us why, for those folks who haven't followed this closely, why is it so fiercely fought?
Sure. So two things, I think. One was the original sort of bone of contention, which was whether or not to build a reverse osmosis plant, low-pressure reverse osmosis plant, which was pretty expensive. There's about 10,000 households served by H2GO, and the plan, roughly $35 million. So you can do a little math. That's a lot of money per household. And that was before we knew anything about Gen X, or before it was widely known about Gen X or PFAS in the water. It was sort of a financial argument. Afterwards, obviously, that argument took on a whole new tenure. So that was the simple one. It was a little easier to deal with.
And that was the year that it happened.
Yes.
Like the news, the General Star News broke it to the public in 2017. And
in
that
June,
was the same year.
Yeah, right before filing. So that became a central issue. Over the last 2 years, it's developed into a much larger argument about how Northern Brunswick County is going to handle utilities. So you've got Brunswick County itself, which gets water from the Lower Cape Fear Water and Sewer Authority. Then you've got Leland and H2GO are both, they both buy water from Brunswick County. And there's a lot of ways in which being able to offer water, water and other utilities means that a town can expand, because the law was changed a couple years ago for involuntary annexation that sort of put the kibosh on the Wilmington-style gobbling up all the little neighborhoods.
Right.
And now you sort of have to entice property owners. One of the great ways to entice property owners is, you know, high-quality, low-cost utilities. So the idea that H2GO has been kind of a bargaining chip that Leland could use or Belleville could use or the county could use if the county was able to take it over. So it's become a much more complicated argument.
And we recently, just this week, got a press release from the mayor of Belleville, which is one of the municipalities involved in this battle. You've got municipalities, not just candidates, battling at this point.
Oh, yeah.
They haven't yet made an agreement about who is going to own the assets of H2GO and thus control the future of that utility, and whether or not the kibosh will get put on the construction of the reverse osmosis plant.
Absolutely.
So what was that press release about?
So this was uncharted territory for us, and the people we spoke at the UNCW School of Government, who are sort of our trusty friends whenever we have complicated government questions, all acknowledged this was truly bizarre, because what you had was Belleville, as most people know, was the recipient of H2GO. Basically, it's all the brick and mortar, the money, everything. And that's been contested. That's a judge has ruled that that was unlawful. But Belleville,
this was in, just to be clear,
sure,
in 2017,
yes,
after the new board was elected, which meant a majority philosophy that H2GO should not move forward with construction of the RO plant.
Yes.
The outgoing board, before they could install the new board, transferred H2GO's assets to the town of Belleville.
Correct.
Because the town of Belleville wants to move that RO plant forward.
Yes. And their argument has been that the desire to save the RO plant and the importance of the RO plant trumps any kind of unethical or even unlawful behavior that took place in order to facilitate that. The agreement that's been floated around was that Belleville would drop its appeal, give essentially the assets back to H2GO. So H2GO would be restored as it was prior to 2017 if that RO plant gets built. Otherwise, they're going to move forward with their appeal. That's a hyper simplification, but that's a rough outline. And what we heard on Monday was, it was from Mike Allen, who's the mayor of Belleville, through the town. So this, as you know, candidates are free to say whatever they want in their own capacity, but this was an official message from the town of Belleville. And he said, Jeff Gerken, who's the chairman of H2GO, has been lying about some of the other aspects of his proposed agreement. And that's not hyperbole. He said in this message, Gerken and his running mate are willing to lie to get elected. And then also said that the those who are running against Gerken, I believe that's Hosmer and Lobb, mm-hmm, are committed to really finally finishing this RO plant. And because of that, then Belleville will be willing to give back the assets. So in essence saying, these two candidates are liars. And these other two candidates, if you vote for them, then we will end this and give the assets back to HGO.
Is that a quid pro quo?
That's what it feels like to me. As an object, I don't live in Brunswick County. I don't have any affiliation with either parties. I'm just an objective spectator. That's exactly what it looks like to me.
In that race, I asked of the candidates, because as you know, we've been doing the Coastline candidate interviews. There seems to be a great deal of name-calling and character assassination on both sides. I mean, both sides are calling each other liars, and they're running in teams, too, which is interesting, I think, for local elections. Why has this devolved into such a dirty kind of character assassination? You don't typically see this at the local level, do you?
We really don't. And we had a story earlier this week where Chairman Kirkin, I believe it was back in August, where he directed H2Go's press office to basically send out pamphlets to like 10,000 households to directly address these personal attacks, which for us also seemed to skirt some of the ethics, if not the law, of what you can and cannot do, because the accusations were made specifically at Chairman Kirkin. And we've seen this, you know, since June. And I think part of it is that much of what is happening with H2Go, Belleville, and Leland is shrouded in litigation. So it's very, very hard to get actual answers. So what you have is government officials arguing about stuff, and we can't see what they're arguing about. So that's part of it, is that it's all just, you know, they say, well, like, well, this, the agreement would give Leland this, or the agreement would unfairly give Belleville that. But as reporters and as, more importantly, as residents and citizens, we can't see what they're actually talking about. And so in a certain way, all that's left is ad hominem attacks.
You're listening to Coastline today. It's a look at municipal elections around the Cape Fear region. Tuesday is election day. Yes, in 2019. With me now, Ben Schachtman. He's managing editor of Port City Daily. And we want to hear from you during this live Wednesday discussion. Do you plan to vote? Why or why not? Did you vote early? Which issue, race, or candidate fires you up this year? Tell us about it by calling us during the live discussion at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And Carolyn wrote in. She said, your guest just mentioned New Hanover County and Wilmington City in the same sentence. I think she was talking about Professor Nadine Gibson, who was on in the first segment. And she says, as far as I can ascertain, there are no elections for New Hanover County residents that don't live in a municipality. For example, Carolina Beach, Wilmington. Can you expound? Yes. And this is really important, Ben, because this question comes up every single municipal election year. So can you explain who gets to vote this year?
Sure. You have to live inside the corporate limits of a town, a village, or a city. So if you, like me, live in unincorporated New Hanover County, you have to watch from the sidelines, which is very frustrating, especially for people who have Wilmington mailing addresses. So you may have for years been getting your mail at an address that says Wilmington, but in fact, you live outside of. And the best way to figure that out is to go to the Board of Elections website for New Hanover County. You can put in your address, not only see where your polling station is, but make sure that this is an election you can or cannot vote in.
And that's true of any of the counties. You've got to live within the incorporated, unincorporated city, town, village. Bill Sappho is running a television ad now.
Is it two?
Is this, and of course, Bill Sappho is longtime Wilmington mayor since 2006. He has a challenger this year that we've talked about who seems to be getting some people to the polls. How common is this for elections at the municipal level?
It depends on where you are. Here, it's I don't feel like it's that common. There seems to have been, if you look at the election spending, Mr. Sappho has not spent that much money in past elections, has not needed, perhaps, to spend that much money in past elections. And the money is moving this year.
Yeah. So what's the danger of not doing research on the candidates before going to the polls? Are there any examples that you can maybe call to mind to point out how important it is to understand the issues and the candidates?
I will tell you, the first election I voted for, full disclosure, it was in New Jersey, so not here. I voted for someone because I thought the name was cool. It was not an adult well-informed. I did not use my civic responsibility well. It turned out...
I just want to give you props for being brave enough to admit that on the air.
Thank you.
You voted for somebody because you thought their name was cool.
Yes. I believe the last name might have actually been McCool. and it turns out they were a very regressive very, how can I put this delicately, very cruel kind of person. And they were running for a judge position. You know, they were for strengthening even the three-strike rule, just very harsh penalties for minor crimes that seem to disproportionately affect low-income and minority communities. Not the kind of person, and that might have been something that appealed to a certain kind of voter, but it didn't appeal to me, and I voted for the wrong person by accident because I just did not do my homework.
Yeah, and I think about the year 2010 in New Hanover County when there seemed to be kind of a red wave happening, and that also affected New Hanover County Commission when voters, it's often theorized, elected Brian Berger, who was the Republican candidate at the time. And it also turned out that he had some disabilities and he started to unfurl in a very public way. And it was kind of tragic in hindsight.
And we have talked about that in the newsroom where we have candidates where we suspect and it's very difficult to deal with because it's, for one, it's difficult to ask someone point blank if they have a disability.
Right.
And two, even if they answer that question candidly, and great for them, how do you then handle that in coverage?
Exactly.
So I think in 2010, there was just no, everyone just didn't touch it.
Right, right. I think you're right about that. You're listening to Coastline. It's a look at municipal elections around the Cape Fear region. Tuesday is Election Day. Ben Schachtman, managing editor of Port City Daily, is with me now, and we want to hear from you during this live Wednesday discussion. Are you voting? Why or why not? Tell us about it by giving us a call at 910-343-1138 or emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. Kahan from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you. I am voting, and I'll be voting for the first time in my life. I'm 50 years old. I've never voted before, so I'm voting for Devin Scott and Kevin Spears because I know both of these young men. I find them to be men of great integrity, and I feel like they're going to make positive changes on the city council and as mayor, and I felt it would be a foolish thing to not vote for Devin, or Kevin for that matter, because this is a chance to make some things happen in the city and to stop the status quo and the runaway development that's happening here in town.
Kahan, tell us why you've never voted before.
Well, ma'am, I always thought of the democratic process as a sham and really a waste of time, and I thought that there could be nothing positive that could come from it, so I just decided to not vote, and I figured I'm better off not voting. I didn't want to participate, and I didn't really feel like anything could happen, anything could change, anything could be done differently. Mm-hmm. I just thought, this is how things are, so forget it. I'll just be okay without voting, but Devin, my mind.
All right. Well, Kahan, thank you so much for calling in and telling us about your plans. And this is actually something that we've discussed in our civil discourse experiment, Beneath the Surface. We have some members of that group who've also talked about why they feel that elections aren't really going to help them no matter how they vote. Fact-checking in the newsroom has been an issue. So you just talked about one element of that. But are there other races, Ben Schachtman, that have kind of landed on your desk, issues that
Absolutely.
Have given you pause?
Yeah, so there was one of the, and there's been a good showing for debates this year in Wilmington City Council. So one of them, there was a question about affordable housing. And Mayor Saffo brought up, I believe it was a $26 million bond that the Wilmington Housing Authority used for the Market North apartments. And he didn't say anything incorrect. You know, it was all factual, but the impression for maybe a less educated person who doesn't know the ins and outs of how, you know, housing bonds work might have gotten the impression that Wilmington City Council, and in part on Saffo's behalf, had given $26 million to help generate affordable housing, which is not true. And I use that as an example because it's a gray zone, right? So if it had been a flat-out falsehood, which did not happen, for the record, I'm saying that, but if any candidate was out there absolutely saying, we lied, we'd fact-check it, but it's those gray areas that really give us heartburn.
You're listening to Coastline. We're taking a look at the issues and the candidates before voters this election year. Yes, 2019 is an election year. Ben Schachtman, managing editor of Port City Daily, is with me today. When we come back from this break, you'll have one more segment to get your question or comment in during the live Wednesday discussion. Going to read some comments from social media and hear from Yvonne in Southport. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. 2019 is an election year. For municipalities in the Cape Fear region, most towns, cities, and villages in North Carolina, but notably not all. Ben Schachtman is managing editor of Port City Daily, and he and his team have covered many of the local races. Today, we're exploring some of the issues, the candidates, the challenges in covering those races, and we're taking your questions and comments. Do you plan to vote this year? Did you vote early? If so, what drove you to the polls? Call or email us during the live Wednesday discussion at 910-343-1138. Email us at coastline@whqr.org. It is the last segment, so just a few minutes left to get your question or comment in. And I want to note that Jim says he voted early with the NAACP 10 days ago on Sunday for their event Souls to the Polls. He says, I enjoy this because I'm from New Jersey, like you, Ben, and there's no early voting there. I want to ask you about these signs that people have been seeing around Wilmington.
Oh, the Neil Anderson one.
Yes, those.
Oh, yes.
So is that the first time that you've seen no signs in local races on a person, not an issue? We've certainly seen, like, yes. No to the baseball stadium.
I was going
to
say that one, yeah.
No to Titan Cement.
Yes.
But a person?
It is the first, and I think it's because, you know, local elections are, most people are paying out of their pocket, or they're paying out of a very small campaign fund, and those signs actually do cost a bit of money. And it is a pain to go and put them. So to go to the lengths to anti-campaign, right, it seems extreme. And so we did get a couple of emails and calls about this, and we did a little digging. Unfortunately, I don't think we'll be able to figure out who put the signs up. We could speculate all day long. But it had to be someone who was specifically opposed to Mr. Anderson's platform. So, I mean, it could be ROW, it could be Democrats in general, although they didn't pick it against Harry Smith, who's also running as a Republican, I believe, or at least was endorsed by the GOP of New Hanover County. So we don't know. It's the first time we've ever seen that. That's uncharted territory.
Interesting. Yvonne from Southport says, I plan on voting in our municipal elections. It's every citizen's duty and right to do this. These elections are the closest people come to affecting change in government. Ben, when we ask people on social media about voter turnout and why it's low in municipal elections, we got answers like Kurt says, most folks don't care enough to do it. I think that's pretty clear. Carrie said, people are apathetic and lazy. Jim said, apathy. New citizens are not engaged. Many feel their vote doesn't count. And mayor has previously run unopposed. Brian, having them held on the odd years instead of the even ones does feel deliberate, almost as if it were in place to keep incumbents in power. Do you have a theory on municipal elections in odd years?
So let me put it this way. We've got two New Hanover County commissioners who are going to step down at the end of their terms, Patricia Cusick and Woody White, which means they'll and it's very likely that the sale of the hospital will not be completed before the election in 2020, which means it will definitely be a campaign issue. I have a hard time believing that people won't find time to get invested in that, despite the fact that it will also be a very contentious presidential election. My point being, I'm skeptical of the argument that the local can't coexist with the national and the state elections. I feel like for the people who are invested, and I take the points about apathy, the numbers are really hard to argue with, but for the people who do go to the polls, they do seem to care about the issues.
They do. Justin said the reason that most people don't vote in municipal elections is there needs to be more media coverage. Now, you and I hear that, and this has been our primary focus for our newsrooms, really, since sometime in September. That, not to say that that's not a legitimate observation, but what are the challenges that small newsrooms face in covering municipal races?
Herding cats, first. No, to be fair, these are all amateur elections, and I mean that in the technical sense that everyone who's running for office also has a day job or is retired, but they are not paid to be full-time members, so they have other stuff to do with their life. So getting a hold of them, finding the time to interview them, processing those interviews, turning them into a final product that we can then publish, that all takes time. The fact-checking that you brought up before, now I don't want to say thankfully, but one of the realities of political campaigning is that you hear a lot of nebulous, non-specific answers to questions, which blessedly do not require fact-checking because there's no real facts to check.
In an interview, that makes me nuts.
I'm sure it does. But you have the advantage, and why I love this format, is that then you can come back and say, okay, you said this, but what about this? And to sort of fine-tune and sometimes twist the knife or sometimes just clarify the question, depending on who you're talking to.
We don't have knives in here.
Just for the record, there are no knives. You can't see it, but there are no knives in this room. But yeah, you have the opportunity to go back and forth. And we can do that too, but that just doubles the time process.
Exactly. Yeah, it does. So when you invite a candidate then to fill out a questionnaire or to show up for an interview or however you're going to do it, and they don't fill out the questionnaire or they don't show up for the interview, how do you treat that in the press? Like, what information does the public deserve or not deserve to have about that?
So I'll give you a really interesting example. We had one candidate in Brunswick County who said I don't know if he didn't like our questions, he found them too complicated. And he didn't have the time to answer them, which is a fair response. Everyone's very busy. So he sent a Star News' response. He sent the same responses to us that he had sent to Star News' questions. And I thought, well, that seems like kind of a jerk move. But on the other hand, he's busy. He did sort of respond. And so that we just sort of just repackaged, and hopefully Gatehouse doesn't sue us for copyright infringement, but because that's the information we had about the candidate. So our feeling is, as long as it's not, you know, it's not slander or libel, if it's information from the candidate that we can get out, we'll put it out. We had candidates who clearly chose to omit answers to certain questions, candidates who answered questions we didn't ask. but, you know, we tried.
Do you include that?
We tried to accommodate it as much as possible. We had one particular candidate in Wilmington who initially did not want to answer our questions because he really wanted to talk about one issue in particular. And then he came around and then did come back and answer our questions. So it took a little back and forth, and we had to get to know him a little bit to see where he was coming from. But we were able to sort of get our questions answered and his message out.
Susan from Wilmington says, I'm 67 years old and have voted in every year since I was eligible. Everyone should vote in municipal elections, she says, because it's the only way to change issues like infrastructure and development. And, you know, call it what you will, real estate interests, runaway development, I think was Devin Scott's initial term for it. But the question always comes up in the city of Wilmington about all of the development / real estate interests on city council. And we never seem to get a clear answer, or I never feel like we successfully flesh out that issue for voters. What's your take on that?
So I will say, you know, we get emails all the time that just say cryptically follow the money. And so I'll tell you this. Charles Chuck Schoeninger is a developer. He's developed much of the northern waterfront, love it or hate it. He has changed the face of that part of Wilmington. Yeah. This year, he donated $3,000 to Mayor Bill Sappho's campaign. Anyone who thinks that $3,000 is going to change a major development that's already been done doesn't really understand how this stuff works. I'm not saying you shouldn't ask questions and know who donates to what campaign, but I think people see stuff like that and they assume that there's some kind of inherent corruption. The main issues we think are that, you know, again, this is part of what you deal with when you have part-time elected officials. And this is an issue a number of the candidates have brought up. Now, there's a lot of heartache, I'm sure, when people see six-figure salaries for elected officials. That people don't like that either. But one of the things you must deal with is if you're not going to pay them to be there 40 hours a week doing a full-time job, then they're going to have other jobs, and those interests are going to come over. Now, whether or not they recuse themselves when they ought to is a whole other issue. But as far as, you know, It's like saying we have a lot of, you know, architects and engineers and business developers on the planning board. Well, yeah, they were the only people who were willing to volunteer and who sort of knew that stuff. So the fact that they have these potential conflicts of interest is different than actual conflicts of interest.
Tessa writes, rely heavily on WHQR candidate interviews to choose candidates. In fact, if not for this station, I would not have realized there was an election Tuesday. You're not alone, Tessa. It's important for people to listen to the long-form interviews. Had I listened only to the less than two-minute sound bites, I would have misdirected myself to a candidate I'm not sure I would want in office. I have to say, Ben Schachtman, managing editor of Port City Daily, you have a lot of fans within WHQR.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Both on the board and on staff. You guys, given the size of your newsroom, have just done, not even that, just period. You've done a phenomenal job of uncovering a lot of the stories that we should, all the news organizations in town should be talking about. You uncovered quite a few interesting details this year, which we've talked about. But the fight and the allegations between Surf City's current mayor and his challenger, a current councilman, why did you decide to spend a certain amount of effort looking into that fight when you're talking about a municipality with a population of about 2,400? How do you do that math?
Sure. And it's a question we'd ask of any story, but it gets particularly complex when you've got an election because you, whether you want to or not, you're playing a role in the decision people that will make that will be really important. And the smaller the town, honestly, the more important that is because it's there's nothing to dilute the impact. So one of the questions we asked was, you know, is this something people should know? We thought, yes. So we checked that box. The next question was, you know, is anyone else going to report this? And we felt like Surf City had historically been underserved. And there was a lot going on that we felt no news outlet. And it's just a difficult place to cover. It's a little far north. It's a little too far south for, like, the, you know, the next region up and a little too far north for us. But it's a growing area. There's a lot of potential development. Increasingly, Hampstead and Surf City are serving as bedroom communities for Wilmington. So we understood that there's an increasing blending of the interests. They face a lot of the same challenges we do in Wilmington at a micro level. And they...
For example,
development. And there is, if you look at Hampstead, we've heard planners from Pender County say, you know, we still have a chance to avoid some of the mistakes Wilmington has made. I don't mean that as a diss towards Wilmington planners, but that's the attitude, is that there's so much undeveloped land in that area that new approaches, possibly more conscientiously environmental choices, are still on the table. I mean, we're down to 3,000-some acres of developable land in Wilmington, and there are, you know, 10, 20, 30 times that in areas around Surf City. So, one, it's interesting as a sort of laboratory of democracy. And as far as these particular stories went, we just felt like, from the people we heard from, that both sides, or all sides, had sort of gotten away with political shenanigans for years because there was no sunshine in there at all. And that seemed like a good place for us to go and shine a spotlight.
Now, is that different from, say, Baldhead Island, which is a small village in Brunswick County, but it's populated by the very affluent? Does that factor into whether you will make the effort to cover something?
I will say Baldhead is one of my white whales. I would love to do better coverage. There's been a number of stories there. You remember the security officer who was shot, mm-hmm. and then it was ruled a suicide. Gary Webb.
Oh, you're going years back.
Yeah, sort of Gary Webb, one bullet wound to the back of the skull, yes. And it was a suicide. And her last words were something like, hey, you don't need a gun, or something like that.
Yeah.
And that fell into the whole weird series of events with the DAs in Brunswick County. But we hear interesting stories from Baldhead all the time. One, it's very insular. They're very good at sort of staying buttoned up. And it is very hard to get there quickly. If we had a staff helicopter, we would have way better coverage of Baldhead Island. But we have to drive to Southport and then hop on a ferry. So it is logistically problematic. And I think that's probably, to be totally honest, probably the biggest factor is just that, man, is it tricky to get down there.
Yeah. We used to have an HQR news chopper in the kitchen used on walnuts. Is there an argument to be made for understanding what goes on in other municipalities? For instance, should Wilmington residents be listening to what happens in Leland and paying attention to Surf City? And how can we as reporters do a better job of drawing those links for people?
Right. So let me take this opportunity to pay Leland a compliment in that they have done a great job at trying to build public spaces, especially considering the scale of what they're considering compared to the size of the town. And there are things that towns do that when you look at it, you say, oh my God, what if we did that at Wilmington? And so things that Carolina Beach does. I mean, take, for example, just in general, the level of civic engagement in Carolina Beach. If you look at those voting numbers, they're statistically significantly higher. The number of people who go to the meetings of like the individual committees.
And so why is that?
It's, you know, it is easier in a smaller town to feel like you have a direct connection. You are, it's the see you at the grocery store effect, just because there's only one grocery store. But, you know, the smaller town, this, you get closer to that sort of critical mass reaction. But also there is something just about the smaller the town, the more willing people are, I think, to think outside the box. Because the scale is smaller, it's less scary. It's less scary for Carolina Beach to say something like, well, no one else has done this, but we're going to try it, and it's going to cost $300,000. Where if you were to scale that up to, say, Wilmington, it could be millions. And that million-dollar untested idea scares people away.
And so you're saying then Wilmington residents could be watching what's happening in Carolina Beach and say, oh, that's how it's working or not working.
Yeah, Wilmington residents should be watching what Leland does, what Surf City does, what Carolina Beach does, what Shallot does, and looking at those as examples, because otherwise all you look at is your own history, and then you're stuck in that silo and you're, you know, potentially doomed to repeat it.
What do you think is going to be the biggest surprise this year? I'm asking you to speculate, which is not what you should ask a reporter, but we do that anyway.
I know, it's wildly unfair of you.
Yeah, it is. I admit that.
I would say I think our biggest surprise will be Wilmington City Council.
The council? Mayor?
I don't know about the mayor. If I'm being completely honest, I think inertia is the strongest force in the universe. But I think council will see some changes.
And I just want to say Barbara commented that she lived in a small Georgia town before moving to Wilmington. City council members ran at large there. Equal representation was required. Always had a local resident representing the district. Ben Schachtman, that's this edition of Coastline. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks also to UNCW Professor Nadine Gibson. Coastline's producer is Caitlin Freund. Technical director is Ken Campbell. Rachel Keith is news producer. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org. Get the podcast, find it on the HQR app, or just tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 2. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. We'll be right back.